connecting people together, sheep with shepherds, so that they can be in caring community with one another, in loving relationship. Our ministry is founded on some key values, on a vision. It's not a program, it's not a strategy. I mean, it has those things with it. But we didn't seek just to implement a strategy or the new method that's out on the block right now. We wanted to make sure our small group ministry was value-driven. So it's important that I start there and then begin to unfold to you how we're shaped, how we work, how we train leaders, all the things that you would want to talk about. So on page one of your handout, you'll see that we begin with a vision. And the vision is captured in this statement, the heartbeat of Willow Creek. To connect people relationally in groups. That's where we begin. Not just to collect people. We're good at that. But to connect people. Relationally. Not into rooms of 200 where they can have some coffee and go home. Not connect them to programs. Not connect them to the institution, but connect them relationally to one another. In groups of 4 to 10 individuals. Why 4 to 10? As you'll see with our model, there's something we believe in, and it's called span of care. Bill mentioned it, I think, in one of the in the seven-step strategy session that you sat in on. We believe it violates a person's span of ability to give care if you have more than 10 people that you need to shepherd. Now, you may be a pastor or a leader in a church who is called the pastor or the shepherd, but you know where reality is if you've got 100 or 200 people that you're supposed to shepherd. It's impossible. You can provide some general vision and some direction and some counseling to some individuals, but you cannot spend the time to nurture and connect with people at a deep level on a regular basis and those kind of numbers. And we believe that somewhere around 10, 11, 12, you hit that crisis point of being able to give adequate care, certainly for a lay leader who's already working in a full-time job to be able to do that. So we leave that span of care at 10. For what purpose? The threefold purpose of growing in Christ-likeness, the vertical relationship with God, loving one another, that horizontal relational relationship, and then contributing to the work of the church to glorify God and make disciples. Always have the Great Commission in mind, but what we've done at Willow Creek now is we've raised the Great Commandment to the level of the Great Commission, to love one another. So the mission statement embodies both. Well, the mission, if you will, or the vision statement leads into five values that drive this ministry. The first is our mandate. It's taken for granted by most people, but we felt we had to state it up front, that Jesus Christ, as head of the church, intends his followers to be like him. Now, that's important because that's how we evaluate every ministry here. If the ministry or the program does not contribute to people becoming like Jesus, let's can it, or let's change it, or let's adapt it. We're not very good at keeping programs around here very long that don't serve a function that's aligned with our vision. And I could give you examples, if we had time, of ministries or programs that we've had to cut over the years here, and even since I've been here, in order to make sure that the energies are going toward making people like Christ. Well, we have a five-fold, you might say, way of saying what we want someone to look like when they become like Christ, and it's embodied in these things we call the five G's that you have on your sheet: grace, growth, groups, gifts, and giving. We do like alliteration here at Willow Creek. But what we said was this. For years, Willow Creek had a membership structure much like many churches. You had to attend the church for a year, have an elder interview. You had to give evidence of a testimony or that you'd come to Christ, be able to articulate that. You gave some references. You jumped through the hoops, whatever they were. And you became a member. And you got the rubber stamp and were approved as a member. But who knows what happened to you after that, right? I was in a large church at one time where one of the teaching pastors speaking about their membership in the 20 of thousands, and a church that has average attendance of about 4 or 5,000, but a membership of 27, 28, 30,000, the teaching pastor said, the FBI can't find half the people on our membership list. Well, we were finding that too. Not only that, people who had not jumped through the hoops were functioning as members, but they weren't on the list. You experienced that too. So we said, let's come up with a functional definition of membership that represents what we think is New Testament Christianity. And we came up with these five G's. First, they've experienced the grace of God. They're a believer, had a transforming encounter with the living God, and come to Christ. Second, they're growing spiritually. There's no indication in the Bible of a Christian who's not growing. Just don't have people become a Christian and just kind of fester for 10 years. There's no evidence for that. Come back to this one in a minute. They're using their gifts in a ministry, according to Ephesians 4. That's the role of the body. And they're giving. They're giving of their time, their talents, their resources, including financial, as part of the church. We think that a growing Christian does that. That's part of maturity. But one thing we never did before at Willow Creek is say membership is equivalent to being a member of a small group. So now in order to be, and this unfolds in January, in order to be a member at Willow Creek, you must be a member in a small group. Why? Because we want participating members. Now there are positional members that we'll honor here. They're Christians. They are positional members in the body of Christ. Each of us has been baptized into his body when we come to faith. And we'll serve them the best we can outside of the small group structure, but that's mainly what happens at weekend services and some of those events. But we can't guarantee the care and the accountability and all of the things that go with a small group. So the elders are saying, we cannot shepherd and feel accountable for this flock unless they're in relationships where there can be accountability and support and nurture. So that's why we're having a functional definition of membership. So quick question.
What happens if they drop out of the small group?
Good question. What happens if they drop out of the small group? Well, it depends for how long. It's a grace-oriented system. It's not, you know, you dropped out last week, you're off the list. It's not like that. But if someone pulled out of group life or intended to for an extended period of time, we would make adjustments. Again, we're entering into this in January, so we'll see how the technical sides of it come out. One more question. Yeah.
How does that work?
Okay.
Does it work for you?
The question is, how does that work for existing members? We've been in a transition for about a year, year and a half, where we really haven't put anyone through the membership process. We've been kind of stagnated as we've ramped up the new structure, introduced small groups, so that now we can deliver the membership process. You can't deliver it until you've got a structure here that can accommodate it, so we've been on hold. So we just have been floating. Willow Creek's got, I don't know, 12, 13, 1400 members. But, you know, we have a lot more people than that actively serving in the body and contributing and doing things. So we're in the process of getting more into that line. Let me just say, it's going to be amazing. And our vision is that the small group leader would stand up in the church and present the members of their group as members to the church. Rather than standing up and having the elders kind of give the bow and do that kind of thing. In a church this size, it's very impersonal and it might work where you're at or, you know, or in a smaller church, but where we're at, to stand up and here's an elder you've never met except for the interview and they say, welcome to the church. And how would it be much better to have a small group leader who shepherded and cared and said, I'd like to present the Johnsons as members who are functioning in the body of Christ here at Willow Creek. And we make that an exciting ministry for our group leaders. Let me continue through this and we'll take some more questions. So that's what we want. We want people to be like Jesus, and we believe at least there's a paradigm there in the five G's of helping them do that. What's our method? Well, there's a second domino that needs to fall in our values, and that is the optimal place for life change is the small group. So you don't tell people you need to get in one if it's not the optimal place for life change. Is it the only place for life change? No. I mean, we have Sunday services, midweek services, communion, we have classes, we have all the things. We're just saying it's not optimal because in a large service, as you know, I can't stand up and ask a question or no one's going to hold me accountable to what's going on in my marriage. No one's going to be able to see where my wounds and my pain are and am I dealing with that and where do I need care? We can't do that. The small group is the optimal place for my story to come in contact with Jesus' story from the scriptures and to see my life transformed. Okay? So that's what we believe. Well, if that's the case, then what's our model? Well, our model states the most strategic person in the life change process of the church is the small group leader. Huge domino. See, be like Jesus. Okay, optimal place to be like Jesus, small group. So who's the most strategic person in the life change process? Well, it has to be the small group leader. Hey, that's a big one. It's a hard one to swallow. I know, I've got seminary and pastoral training, and I'd like to think that when I get up and teach in a big group, I'm the optimal person for life change, but I'm not. It's when I meet with my small group that I have the most impact in people's lives. So we say the most strategic, not the most important, the most strategic person. Because to me, the most important person is For example, when I show up on Sunday morning and little four-year-old Ryan, my son, goes through that little trap door into Promised Land, into his class. The most important person in the church to me is right on the other side of that door. Or if I need to hear something from the truth, the Word of God, preached to me because of where I am that Wednesday night when I come to New Community, I'm looking forward to hearing the teaching pastor that week. That's the most important person to me. Or maybe it's the worship team who leads me into a spirit of worship. But the most strategic person in the life change process is the small group leader. What's our mechanism? Well, you need a mechanism because you can't say, okay, you need to be like Jesus. Groups are the place it happens, and we've got leaders there who make it happen, but we don't have any groups. We don't have enough groups. Can't say, be a member of the church by joining a small group if you don't have enough of them. So our mechanism is that we have a group system that multiplies and expands so that there's enough groups that people can enter into life change. And that system we've adopted that I'll unfold in a few minutes is called the Metachurch system. Carl George wrote a book called Prepare Your Church for the Future. Many of you have read it. And he coined the phrase, along with some others, called the Metachurch, meaning beyond church. The idea being church can exist outside of the four walls in small group life. And so that's the system that we have adopted for the multiplication and expansion of group life. And we'll explain how that happens. Finally, our means is this all must take place in an attitude of prayer and celebration. We are deeply dependent upon the Spirit of God here for what is happening. This is not a program, again, in and of itself. It's a value-driven ministry structure, okay? Well, what kind of structure do we have? We have a vision and values. That's great to have. But those vision and values must now be embodied in a structure. It's one thing to have a vision. It's another thing to have a structure that goes against the vision. Right? Okay. We need a structure that embodies the vision. So the structure is this metachurch system. I know some of you are familiar with this, but for those of you who aren't, let me just get some terminology out of the way up front so that we have a lingua franca. And that's all Carl did. He said, look, you have small groups. You call your small group leaders shepherds. Another church I'm with calls them leaders. Another church calls them lay pastors. And some, I don't know who's calling who what. So, I, Roman numeral for a member, one. For every 10 members, we have a leader, because that's the span of care. So we use X as a colloquial kind of term, okay? So when I come to your church and we talk about groups, I can say, how you doing with your X group leaders? Okay, you know I mean small group leaders. For up to every five leaders, there's a coach. L is the Roman numeral for 50. So if there are five leaders, each overseeing 10 members, we've got up to 50 people in the system. We call that a coach. Okay. And for up to every 10 coaches, there's a D, a division leader. D equals 500 in Roman numeral terminology. And as you can see from this overhead, every person in this system has an apprentice leader, a leader in training. Well, what does that look like? It looks like this, which is on the next page in your handouts, page 3. It's a small group division, we call it. And what we have here is this division leader, the D, who is our staff level person, overseeing 5 to 10 coaches, providing care for them, providing training, direction, nurture, each of whom, now these are lay leaders at this level, each of whom work with up to 5 small group leaders or leader couples, if it's the couples ministry, for example. Okay. Yeah, it looks like Amway, I know. That's because it is an amoral structure through which you can deliver anything. You can deliver truth, you can deliver heresy, you can deliver anything you want. It is simply a structure, okay? Simply a delivery system. People assign morality to the metachurch. I've heard some people talk about it. I'm not sure the metachurch is good or it's bad or it doesn't help. It's just a structure. Whatever you put in up here comes out down here. If this is weak and bad, the system becomes weak and bad. So it's, in that sense, a dangerous structure too. It's got to have quality controls, and we'll talk about those in a minute. But this is the workhorse, if you will, now of Willow Creek. Right now we've got 25 of these. And they are churches within the church, if you will, where people are getting appropriate care and communication can occur up and down line, where we know there is shepherding, where leaders, coaches visit leaders in group meetings, where they're in touch with them, etc. The vision is this. Everyone is cared for. No one cares for more than 10. We honor that span of care. We don't want division leaders caring for more than 10 coaches. We don't want coaches caring for more than, actually, it's 5 leaders. The span of care of the coach is reduced because this is a layperson trying to oversee 5 groups, spending a lot of time with those leaders to encourage and support them. And we don't want to take their span too high, so we keep it down near 5. But I'm an area leader, and I have division leaders report to me, and I only have 4 or so right now, but it would not be good for me to have more than 7 to 10 reporting to me. It would violate span of care. We're trying to organize the church around span of care from the elder board, et cetera, on down. Okay, Bill has mentioned that. So you see some things here about a division on page 2, just some points that are common. But one thing I want to highlight is under Roman numeral 2 on page 2, it's a ministry people can do if you boil it down to some basic things. And there are 4 basic things we're asking leaders to do. And you see them there. Develop a leadership team. That means as a small group leader, I gather an apprentice next to me and a host or hostess, and we form the core leadership team of a group. Okay? Second thing I need to do is to be able to conduct a meeting. Or if I'm a coach at this level, I need to be able to conduct a huddle. That's a gathering of me and my leaders. Third thing I need to be able to do is shepherd those people, provide them with care, encouragement, support, whatever they need. And fourth, I need to be able to expand the ministry, which is why I have an apprentice that I have in training, so that over time, as these apprentice leaders next to these exes begin to take on groups, well, see, then this coach's span of care would suddenly be violated if all of these groups gave birth to new groups, and we now had 10. Well, that's why the coach has an apprentice, so the apprentice can move out and take over the new ones. It's all across the system. We all expand the ministry. Now, I'll take questions in just a second, but I want to turn to page 4 through 6. Stay on page 4 for a minute, but you'll see the small group leader's responsibilities at a glance. You see those 4 areas. And then the whole job description is built around those 4 areas. Okay? Questions about the vision or the structure that I just described? Yes. We'll go right across the room, here or then there. Yeah.
The coaches, they have a maximum 5.
Right.
They are not.
The question is, coaches, they have a maximum of 5? Yes. Are they small group leaders? No. We encourage that. Some are. And we just monitor how they're doing with their span of care. Because as you can imagine, if I have this span of care, and in addition I'm leading a group, I've got 10 potentially that I'm caring for, and then another 5. So I'm getting out there a little bit. Most of our huddles don't have 5. When you're at 5, we say pregnant. And we're getting ready to hopefully spin some of this off under your apprentice and share that span of care. But in order to keep these people in group life, some of them are members of groups. See, we encourage that. Or they have other relationships because they've come up through the structure, so to speak, so they have a sense of community. It's a different job description, the coach. We didn't include it in here, but even though it centers around those same 4 areas, we're looking for someone who has more leadership gifts as opposed to shepherding gifts, so that your best small group leaders are not necessarily your best coaches. Just like it's the old salesperson, sales manager type thing. You know, maybe a great salesperson, but not the best salesman. This position is someone who really likes to shepherd and care for leaders, can bring leadership. And these people have stronger shepherding gifts usually, so there's kind of a mix there. Quick follow-up question? Coaches are not necessarily former group leaders, but most of the time they are, because we, with a new system here, we want to make sure they've experienced. One of the things we're going to talk about is birthing a group. It's what we say is the apprentice leader and your group, the group becomes full. We practice something we call the open chair, and we'll get to this in a minute. The group gets to a certain size. That apprentice needs to go out and bring life to a new group. Coaches help coach that process. We don't want someone coaching that process who hasn't participated in it. Okay, that's an authenticity type thing, credibility question. So typically they have come through the structure. Yeah. Then I'd say I'd go here and then over here and I'll come back. Yeah.
Related question. Basically, then you're saying that the L's and the B's also, in addition to the responsibility either as coaches or as division become their group? In other words, with these other elves, these other division leaders?
The question is the group life relates to the group life of the coaches and the division leaders. For some, the huddle has become that. We just caution them on how they do it. Remember, this person, we're asking this person, this ex-leader, to get their care primarily from their group and from their coach. Okay? We're not asking them to care for their coach. So if the coach sees this as the primary unit for getting all of their nurture and care, that can be dangerous unless the huddle all agrees to do that. And we have huddles that do. Typically, they may huddle together with other coaches or be in a group somewhere where they're getting that or have significant community-built relationships because they've been in group life. For example, they've been here for 3 years maybe before they've coached, and they have enough relationships there that for a season they can coach and feel okay that they're not in a meeting every week. But that's a nut we're still trying to crack. I mean, that's in the model is they typically don't lead a group, but we want them in a group, but then you start saying how many meetings can they go to, and you deal with that. So you have to kind of work with your own church and the number of meetings and what the expectations are, et cetera, and we're trying to find a balance in there, and we just find it working a lot of different ways. Yeah, Michael?
Within the structure of these key positions, do you have resource material for each one to be able to work through in their job or their ministry description?
Yes, we do have resources. The question is for each, we have job descriptions and other resources and training at each of these levels.
Are those available?
Not at this point for dissemination, though. We're still in the process of developing some of it. We have a lot going down here. We've just started in the last year to do a lot more with our coaches, and frankly, we're still working on this level. I mean, we have people that are division leaders that are kind of expected to know everything because that's where they're at staff level. We're at the point now where we have so many of them, however, that we're designing some division leader training. We have one coming up next week, a division leader training day, where we're really going to build into them and
you
work with them.
You said that there were some on the smaller level?
Excuse me, somewhat.
Resource material.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So we don't have it in printed form that we sell or anything at this point. We just do week to week, month to month, kind of put outlines together and training. Let me talk to you about training in a few moments, and maybe you'll understand why that's not available, okay? Yeah. You're only allowed to ask one question. I'm sorry. No. You can have three. That's all right. Let me answer them one at a time. Are these small groups only for believers? No.
Second is, when and how often do they meet?
When and how often do they meet? We ask them to meet at least twice a month. When they meet, where they meet, with whom they meet, is up to them.
And the last question is, do they have a kind of a starting time? They start at a certain time.
Do they start and end at a certain time? Yes, but the group determines that. Is there another part? I didn't mean to cut you off. Sorry.
Not like the meeting time itself, but when we start from November.
I see. Is there a duration for the group to meet as a group? You'll see as we'll talk about group types in a minute. We do have one type of group, disciple-making group, that does run for a duration typically because it's tied to a given curriculum. When the curriculum's done, in essence, it's done its task. Okay. But see, our groups birth and give life to new groups, so many are ongoing. They continue to give birth to new groups by bringing in, training an apprentice leader and sending them out, and they could go on indefinitely in that sense. So we don't say you can only meet for 2 years. Now, a group may contract to do a time span thing, but we allow the group to do that. Okay. These two more, and then we'll move on. Chuck? Let me go to Chuck and then Bill. Why is it significant to have those G's up as why is it significant to have someone who is a member? Yeah, I think it's just because we found this biblical precedent, at least our leaders felt, there was the difference between a positional member and a functioning member in the local church, and some way to distinguish what that is. That the New Testament doesn't seem to have, at least it certainly doesn't support someone being a believer in the body of Christ who is not a part of a local body. And yet we have people in America that do that. So we do want to make a distinction. However, there is no perks to being a member. We don't say, you're a member, now you can vote, now you can this, now you can that. We say, you're a member, great. You're fulfilling a biblical injunction to be part of a local functioning body. And by that, you glorify God. That's your reward. So there's no special, if you're a member, we do this for you. this is the call of the scriptures, is to be a functioning member in the body. So it's presented more that way. Bill?
How long on the division leader, how long a span before burnout?
What's the burnout span for a division leader? I don't know. Do we have any in here? Yeah, we've got one in here. Yeah, you know. No, for a division leader, it's a staff-level position, and it's a paid position. Yeah, maybe I wasn't clear on that. This is a paid position at this point. These are not. Okay.
How long for leaders then?
We're, you know, kind of still a little new. The question is, how long for leaders? And we're 2 years into our new model, but we haven't had a lot of attrition in it, so we don't know how long it'll go on. But typically, studies have shown the average small group lasts 2 years. And I think we just took a survey of our leaders, and many of them feel very refreshed after 2 years of leadership. And it's because we now are doing a lot of these things that I'll talk to you about, span of care, support, encouragement, that weren't there before. They've got someone overseeing their care needs. They feel part of a structure. Just to tell you, I sat down with an elder who said, with tears almost in his eyes, I can't tell you how excited I am about this new thing that we're doing here, because I talked to a group leader who thought they were going to have to leave the structure just because of life stage. We're having a child in the middle of a job change. And he thought, we should pull out for a while. But then he said, then we thought, we have never gotten care like we're getting now, and we would miss the care if we opt out of the system. So we're staying in. They're getting care from a coach and a division leader like they could not get, certainly in a church of this size, in any other way. So it's highly motivating. So we've got a vision. We've got a structure. Let me move on to the groups themselves. What do they look like? And on page 7... we list some core elements that we got from a seminar that we went to by Ralph Naber. Ralph didn't conduct it. He's overseas now, but Bill Beckham did. And it's kind of the where do we go from here seminar on cell groups. But he says there's 4 things, and we like it, and we're going to adopt it. We learn a lot from others. And they say there's 4 elements as part of a small group, and you can figure them out as we go. You'll see. One is a man, and I take that generally, ladies, okay? Man to God. Right? We approach God. We come to God in worship, in prayer. The second, God to man. The scriptures speak to us. His Holy Spirit speaks to us. But we hear something from God. Third, man to man in relationship. Fourth, man to world. This is all on page 7. Well, what are the general components, however? I mean, this is kind of what takes place in a meeting, these kinds of relational activities. But what could you say are the 4 things that are part of every group? And there they are at the bottom of page 7. We say every group has a component of loving, learning, doing, and deciding. You'll see on page 8 this overhead. Each group is responsible for or functions as a loving community for people, regardless of what type of group it is. I'll cover the types in just a second. But we're there to love and care for one another. That's an injunction in John 13. By this all men will know you're my disciples if you have love for one another. They have a learning component, a Bible study component. We want people to interact with the truth. These are not social clubs. These are not just touchy-feely, carry-helpy clubs. Okay? They interact with truth. Truth changes lives. Truth purifies. So there's a learning component. Every group has a decision-making component. It must gather together as a social unit and decide when it wants to meet, what it wants to do, how it will function, how it will hold each other accountable, etc. And then there is a do component, a sense of mission or task to every group. Now, these things vary, and what I've given you here on the overhead is the example of what we call a serving or task group. Its major emphasis is do. They gather together to do something primarily. But they also learn, they also certainly love, and they make some decisions. But the emphasis, we might say, falls on do. So people gather together, like in Scott's ministry, who's sitting in the room here, in the Seeds area down by the bookstore, in the tape ministry. There they gather, let's say, to copy tapes for an hour and a half together, an hour together. Well, then they'll tag on to that 30 to 40 minutes of group time. Well, they'll pray for each other, encourage each other. They'll have a shepherd that cares for them, etc. But the major function is do. Now, you just flop these around. You could write learn up here and move do down. Then you'd have a disciple-making group because the emphasis is on learning certain doctrines, certain spiritual disciplines. A third type of group, a community group, we'll cover these in a minute, would emphasize the love component maybe more. Now, all groups are equally loving, but I mean, its desire is to provide a community of acceptance and care for people. Okay, so every group uses those elements at different extremes, okay? But on page 9, a healthy cell embodies certain functional elements as relates to who is in that cell and what the players are, so to speak. So this is something from Carl George, and he says, this is what I would call, in general, a healthy cell. It has these elements to it. Not every meeting, not every kind of group all the time, but if he could give a general picture of what a healthy cell looks like, this would be it. And it has the leader, the apprentice leader, as you can see, as we go around to the left, may have a babysitter type person if they require that. Every group has a hospitality person or team that helps provide an environment of warmth and fellowship. You can move up to the right. I'll come to the one at the bottom in a minute. You can see someone has visited the group, the L, the coach. Our coaches visit their groups. We try to have them visit each group once about every 3 months. So about every month, the coach is doing at least one visit. So one night out of the month, they'll drop in on a group with warning, and you know everyone knows, but they'll visit a group once a month to keep up with their groups. Group may have a seeker in it. We're open to that. Not typical of disciple-making groups, but of our community groups or serving groups, there may be seekers in it. Briefly to say, we do have seeker-targeted small groups where all of the members are seekers, except for the leader and the apprentice. We have about 30 of those going right now. Then you see an empty chair. We like open chair, and so does Carl. He's now changed this to open chair. It's a little more positive sounding. Empty means someone's left. Open means we're inviting someone to come. And that's the idea, and our groups literally put that in the room, or they leave a space on the couch as a statement of the value of the group to be prepared to bring in new life into the group. No, not every meeting, but on a regular basis to add new life to the group. It's not us four, no more. It's not that kind of mentality, okay? Now, will groups close for a season? Yes. Will they attack a curriculum for a season and stay closed? Yes. But for a group to say, we're going to start with 6 people, and 2 years later we're going to have the same 6 people in it, not unless you're a disciple-making group. We'll allow that because of its curriculum tie-in, but not the other kinds of groups. Well, then we've got growing disciples, of course, in groups. And then a person that Carl has called an EGR, which he has just changed. I just met with him a couple days ago. He said it's an ECR now. And I like it better, too, because this sounds like you're putting someone down, and that wasn't his intent with the term. He calls them extra care required. And any of us could fall in that chair at any time, couldn't we? We have a crisis, an emotional difficulty, or it may be someone who has that just kind of as their function regularly, right? They've got a very abused background, brokenness, alcoholism, whatever. They need extra care most of the time. Or they're very socially dysfunctional. They don't know how to carry on relationships. And if you had 10 of them in a group, they would destroy the group, okay? And that's not because they're bad people. They just don't know how that works. But every group has one or two because a group can handle and nurture those people and encourage them along. We do have groups in our support ministry under community care specifically designed, obviously, for people in extreme crisis in these kinds of situations. Okay? So that gives you an idea of a group. And the definitions are on the next page. Let me cover the kinds of groups real quickly, and I'll take some questions. The love, learn, decide, do, that gave you the paradigm, and I've mentioned them a little bit already, but you can see the first type we have is a community group on page 11, and you see their focus. It's primarily to just be open and to assimilate people into a loving, caring environment in the church. Yes, they use curriculum. They get to choose which one they'd like to use. We have an advantage here. We have a bookstore that has quality curriculum in it, so it's already been checked out. But if you don't have that luxury, either ask your people to go to the local bookstore if you feel good about it, or to have someone in your church sign off on curriculum, or to publish a list of the top 50 that you say are fine and they can use. And if they use one in addition to that, just to tell you what it is so that you can take a look at it. But you want some quality control there. But community groups choose their own, and so do serving groups. Disciple-making groups, they are... groups that meet in order to meet a target, to hit a target. That's been known around here for many years at Willow Creek. You may have been at that seminar in the past. We use the Walking with God series here as the curriculum because we have a target we want to hit. And the target is shown on your sheet, and you'd fill in those blanks by saying a disciple is someone who, first of all, walks with God. Someone who walks with God. And that's why the series was entitled Walking with God. And Judd Poling and Don Cousins wrote this as a disciple-making curriculum. And it's available in our bookstore. But a disciple walks with God. They also live the Word. They put the Word in action in their lives. The third thing they do is they contribute to the work of the church, using their gifts, using their talents, using their financial and other resources to help the kingdom of God. And ultimately, they impact their world. And that's how the curriculum is designed around those four sections. Just real briefly, you can see this is the leader's guide. It's in two volumes. Now, there are six participants' guides. It covers these four areas, but it's broken up into six guides. You can see the size of these versus the small size of the guides. And the idea behind it is to give the leader everything they need right here to do the study, to do the work, so they don't have to have 10 resources that they're hunting down. It's all in here, the questions, the answers, Bible study background, everything is in there. So they look huge, but it's kind of all you need to know is in there. And those groups meet for 1.5 to 2 years, and they go through that curriculum. Now, some of our disciple-making groups are practicing the open chair between modules. They're going for 12 weeks with one of the booklets, and then they're saying, let's invite a couple into the room. And they're trying some of that. So it can be done with the disciple-making process. Okay? Finally, and this is more in the summary you see on page 12, there's a third type of group, which is called a serving group. And as I mentioned, they gather together to do a task. In that summary sheet there on page 12, you see all three of the kinds of groups and how they compare related to member profile and curriculum and whether they're closed or open and the goals for the group, etc. And you can read that later. But that just gives you a feel. If I could, there's a hard line between the serving groups and then the community and disciple-making groups. They're more similar. The community and disciple-making groups both have a similar function, of course, except the disciple-making groups tied to a curriculum with certain disciplines, certain doctrines we want to get across. But they don't gather around a task. They're like a normal group, if you will. The serving groups gather primarily to do the task, so they are very different, require some different skills and things. Okay. So with those in mind, let me take some questions. Yes, I'll go right across the back. Okay. Okay. The question relates to curriculum. For disciple-making groups, that's the curriculum. For community groups, there's up to 200 or whatever available through the bookstore, either there or they can be ordered. Serendipity series, Nav Press, you know, all the things that you would be familiar with, we make available. Right. In the sense that the bookstore doesn't buy anything that's off the wall. So we just tell our people, go to the bookstore, there's a small group curriculum section, anything you want, it's there. Now, it's so big that now we realize we need to come up with a tool to help them choose a curriculum. And we're putting together a little flow chart to help them do that. But in addition, I would recommend what Judy Hamlin has put together. And this is the Small Group Curriculum Resource Guide some of you have seen. I think there's several thousand in here. And she's got a little rating on each one and a description of it. One of the things we'll do is make this available in our bookstore and just put a chain on it down there. And leaders can come down and take a look and say, ah, this would be helpful. But I think even this is so big that kind of, where do I start? And we want to give them some options. This is in the bookstore, yeah. Mm-hmm. It should be down there. The Curriculum and Small Group Resource Guide by Judy Hamlin. It's Nav Press. It is on computer disk also. So if you like that kind of thing, you can have it. There and there, yeah. Good question. Who decides what group someone goes in? We'll get to this in a minute in more detail, but we allow groups to fish their own members in, we call it. We do not place people any longer. Okay, and I'll give you the parameters for how they do that in a moment. Okay.
I come from a small church, about maybe 60 to 75, and we have just about all members in small groups doing Georgia's structure. Mm-hmm.
I'm so thrilled to hear that. People say, this works with mega churches. I've heard of four in the last 2 days that are less than 70 people who just are having just a thrill of their life with their groups with it. So sorry for the editorial comment, but people often think, yeah, you're Willow, you're doing it. I hear lots of churches, smaller churches, using it.
How are structures go? It's 2 weeks of like discipleship, 1 week service, group turns into a service cell. They go out and do maybe something in the church. Then 1 week, leaders get together for leadership training. So
the 4 weeks they meet, it's two as a group discipling, one as a serving function, and one for training.
Yeah, but
that's great.
Church, it's hard to, you know, have service and discipleship. So
yeah.
They just start community groups, too. They'll meet once a month to do barn swing or park dog roll, something like that. So you can do it in small churches. You just need the leadership there. We have 10 leaders of this church of 60 to 70 people.
That's great. I'm very encouraged by that. Thank you. Here and then there. Dan?
I'm curious on your filling of your D position. Do you let people work through the ranks and actually come on staff, or do you require a more formal education background?
The question relates to the filling of the division leader position. How do we do it? And I would say it depends on what you want done. When we were in startup mode 2.5 years ago with this, we went out and hired some people. Some transitioned within the church from other ministries, but the idea was they were all kind of new hires for that, because we wanted some high-energy people who had done this either somewhere else or something similar, and there weren't enough of them here. There were some here, but not as many as Bill wanted to kind of get this thing up and started. So that would be going more to outside someone bringing them in. What we're doing now, though, is all my division leaders, I think, have a division apprentice who's been a coach in the structure, and that is more the model we'd like to see long-term. So maybe on occasion we hire someone, but you want someone whose heart beats for this. And when you hire someone, you've got someone typically, you know, like me or someone else we brought in, who has other gifts and interests and or needs to be in related areas. So I don't just do a division anymore, okay? I teach and do some other things. But we've got people who just wake up every day. They can't wait to do a division, and that's what we want. The others will help you get started more quickly, but in a year or two, they'll be saying, now, can I preach every other weekend? Can I? I'd like to start a new ministry over here, and, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Networking in terms of this, is that like a group itself, small group in terms which opens up to this?
Is the networking ministry, just to clarify, a small group? What we're doing with network, it is still in the seminar format that groups can go to and take, or members can go to and take the seminar. We're rewriting the curriculum to be done in small groups now.
Because you have a lot of dynamics in a small group where they're more liable to realize their gifts by virtue.
We're about 10 years behind in most churches on doing that in small groups. That's no slam against network. It's just we've always done it at the seminar level. It's worked great. And groups have gone. The disciple-making groups all used to pack up as part of their curriculum, go take network together for 4 weeks, and then back into group life. So it was perfect for that. But now with a new model and all kinds of groups flying all over the place, we thought, let's get this down to a structure. We can just put it into a group, and they can do it.
Because wouldn't they discover a greater passion in the small group?
I think so. They would. Yeah. Yeah, these two, and then we move on. Steve? Yeah.
Yeah, you're talking about discipleship groups could go up to a couple of years, but there was a concern for the longevity of another group. If it was still the same group of people 2 years later, it hadn't spun off yet. Are you using like a 12-month model for a leader to say, hey, look, if one of our X groups hasn't spun off another group within a year's time, it's going to reevaluate that group and perhaps encourage them to shift into other areas? Help me understand that dynamic.
The question relates to what's the dynamic with the time span for a leader before they have to give life to a new group or whatever. We say on the average it's 12 to 18 months that a group should birth. I'll talk about birthing in a minute, but that's kind of a time frame we're giving them. If it's a group that's designed, such as a community group, under normal circumstance to give birth in 12 to 18 months, and 18, 19, 20 months comes along and it's really stagnated, that's something we'll see a lot earlier, because we are not, these groups are not somewhere out at arm's length. They have coaches, people visiting them, they're into a system and a structure for training so that we know along the way what's happening. How are you moving? Are you getting ready to birth? How's your apprentice? You'll see on the report form that the leaders fill out at the bottom, it says, every time they fill a form out, it says, what are you doing to develop your apprentice? See? So if it's nothing, 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 you know, so wait a minute. Or we're struggling with finding an apprentice. We lost our apprentice and we can't find another. There may be very valid reasons, but we stay on top of it the whole way, so it's not a surprise one day. Whoa, we're 20 months and nothing's happened. But in general, if it's 2 years or 2.5, the group will just start to turn inward, and it may die. And we've had some groups die. They all do not birth. However, last year we had 91 groups birth. Gives you an idea that that's 91 leaders. We didn't have to go out into the blue to recruit. You know, they were brought in as an apprentice, trained in the structure, and in a year and a half came out. It's a beautiful thing. Now, not all of them birth. I mean, there were more that tried, I'm sure, that failed, but we had 91 that tried. That's 91 more than we would have had. I said one more, and I really need to move on. Good question. It relates to how to keep track and make sure I understand it, of whether a given group will go in and work in a place like Seeds or it'll be a group that normally meets in that environment.
Yeah, I don't know how those, I mean, called upon?
Okay. I think I see what you're saying.
There
are groups that gather to do that because that's the ministry they serve with. In other words, I may sign up to use my gifts in Seeds, okay, to copy tapes is our example. So I'll go there and they do it, how often, Scott, weekly? They do it weekly. Okay, they gather on a night, let's say, and they do it before, or, you know, they do these instant tape things and other things. So they do their tapes, and then they'll meet as a group. Now, there may be people that want to serve there who are in disciple-making groups, but they feel like using their gifts to work with Seeds. We don't force them into a Seeds group. They can serve with the team. When the serving time's done, they can hit the road. But the Seeds team's always trying to fish them in, of course. Oh, why'd you like to be part of our group? So there's that element. Then the second part of your question relates to, can a group come and do that function? The answer is yes. Probably doesn't happen as often there because there's some skills there and there's some deadlines to be met so that when you go up and order one, it's there and that kind of thing. But in other ministries, we're making available opportunities, for example, to disciple-making groups who could, 1 week, do what this gentleman was talking about, be a serving team that week and go do something either within the church or as a mission-type thing outside the church. Okay. Is that your...
Would there be interference?
Is there some kind of a source of accountability, like an administrative center above all the tasks that are going on, directing this group to go there and that group to go there?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Thank you for the clarification. Is there a kind of a clearinghouse to determine what group should do what? Seeds determines its own needs. It may send a brochure out to people saying, would your group like to serve next month doing this or in the bookstore? Or we've got... you know, a conference coming up, we need extra help. If your group could come and volunteer that week, that'd be great. But each ministry controls that, so there is not one point person saying, this disciple-making group needs to go over and clean the carpets, or, you know, there's not anything like that.
They'll send out their petition for a need, and there just isn't any group that will come and help them.
I'm sure there is, yeah. That can happen. It's not automatic that it happens, that every time they ask, they get help from a group, certainly. Yeah. Okay, let's move on. Question is now, okay, we've got a vision, we've got a structure, we know what groups look like, how do they grow? Well, they practice something called the open chair, and on page 13, I just want to say the value of it is that we have a constant reminder to people that there's life beyond their group. The very thing that they love and they're glad to be part of can't be kept to themselves any more than a church can shut its doors and say, we're at this number. We don't want anyone else coming in the rest of our lives. The idea is, again, it's not this hectic, chaotic thing. People picture the open chairs. Someone's going to walk in off the street and come into our group one night. No. We're telling people, if you're a group leader, can you invite two new people to your group this year or assimilate two in this year? Most leaders say, yeah, I think we can do that. Now, you may have to invite 8 or 9 to get two, but they practice the open chair and their relationships from within the group. So we tell people, how do you find them? This is how you find them. 6 F's, another nice alliteration. Family, friends, people part of the fellowship from Willow Creek or that you have fellowship with. Fun, who do you have fun with? Who do you work with? And who do you meet through what we'll talk about in a minute, these fishing pond activities and events we put together. So we tell groups, get everyone in your group to come up with a list of names from these categories, and then pool it all together. You'll probably come up with 45 or 50 names of people that could potentially fill the open chair. So we want people to have relationships with others to invite them in, okay? So it's not some cold drop-in kind of thing. It's very much a process, just like you would invite someone into your church that you've gotten to know over time, say, why don't you come join us for church? Okay. We encourage, for example, couples groups to meet have the leader couple go to dinner or meet them ahead of time with even another couple from the group. The six of them go have a cup of coffee before they ever come to that first meeting. So they already know three or four or five people in the group before they even visit the group. Okay. So it's very much a process. Well, if you continue to fill the open chair, something happens, and the group gets pregnant. That's what we say, and it must give birth. It gets pregnant at around 10 or 11, which means when it's at that level, the apprentice has to be really being trained and getting ready to birth. Now, birthing, the value of it is communicated from day one. It's no surprise to the group or to the apprentice or anyone. When you get in the group, you realize that one day, one or two of these people are going to go out and give life to a new group. The whole group doesn't explode. We don't use the term divide or break up. We like birth because that's what it is. So, groups must birth or they die, just like a woman who is pregnant must give birth or either she or the baby will die. And we think spiritual death can occur in a group that becomes closed and inward-looking unless some new life is given on some kind of regular basis every 1 to 2 years. How do you minimize the trauma of that? We've just got 9 things there that you could read later. I just want to say a lot of it is just vision and preparation. Okay? We don't spring this on anyone as some kind of shock. Well, people say, okay, we want to fill the open chair. How do we do it? We've exhausted our network of relationships. We don't like our family. We don't have any friends. There's no one we know at the fellowship. We don't have any fun. I hate the guys I work with. Well, then we come down to number 6. And that's a fishing pond. And a fishing pond is simply an event that people come together to socialize, but we've got group structures built into it and group leaders hanging around it and apprentices hanging around it. For example, in a couples ministry, since I work with that, we have community mixers. We'll say, anyone that lives in Elgin, next Wednesday night for an hour and a half before new community, we've got some fruit and some coffee and some things downstairs. And if you want to meet other people from Elgin, from your area, and Elgin's a good 30-minute drive to the church, so there's people very eager to meet people near where they live, they'll show up. And we may get 20 to 50 people show up, for example, and we have them sit around tables in groups of 6. Or actually, it can be any size, because what we do is we put a process together that's very relational and yet informal. We have them pair off with someone they don't know there. And we give them a list of questions to ask each other, and they start out at an interview level. How long have you been at the church? Where do you live? What do you do? That kind of thing. And they interview each other for about 8 or 9 minutes. They kind of get to click a little bit, and then the two of them go find another pair for another 8 or 9 minutes. Now you have 4 together, and they introduce their partner to each other. We let that happen. When that's all done, we start it all over again. Now go find someone you haven't met yet. We do this 2 or 3 times. By the end of the evening, they've met 8 or 9 or 10 people from their area. And usually out of that 8 or 9 or 10, they've met a couple people that they have what we call affinity with. Something about it makes them feel like, you know, they were interesting. We'd like to connect with them. We share some things in common. They have kids the same age, or maybe they live 2 blocks away. We didn't even know it. So we put the ball in their court, they get each other's phone numbers, and they follow up, and they connect. Now, again, in the room there are group leaders and apprentices looking for people to fill the open chair, so they're connecting as well, and they're saying, you know, we met the Smiths tonight, and they seem pretty neat. Let's invite them to our group next week. We've seen whole groups come out of that to our surprise. A leader shows up, wants to start a new group, walks away with 8 people. I don't know how it'll be in a year from now. You know, we'll find out, but it's better than saying, I want to lead, and there's no one I know from my area. So that's just one example. Seeds does them. The food ministry does great ones. You can imagine to gather around food is a fun thing, and they have all kinds of stuff going on. But when they do it, they're always getting people connected and talking to each other, and there's leaders present meeting people. So we do fishing ponds. 4th aspect of a group that helps it grow is curriculum. And I won't spend a lot of time on that. We just want to highlight, when we say grow, we don't just mean quantitative growth. We mean qualitative growth. So we help our groups learn to choose a curriculum, we teach them how to use it, and we give them some resources to work with there. Okay. Now the next few pages, and I'll take some more questions, I just hit real quickly. They're just forms. People ask us all the time, do you have these forms? Because I mentioned it in a talk, and so we're putting it in there. I'm not going to talk through them. But the first one on page 14 is what's filled out after a meeting by the leader. It's our touching base form. It gives some data on who was there or how many were there and who was absent, etc. And then we want to know, what are you celebrating about your group? What problems do you have? What needs do you have? Who are you praying for? These are kept very confidential in case that's a question. We don't, you know, many people don't put names on them. They may just say there's a couple in our group that we're praying for. There's some needs in their family or something like that. And then what are you doing to develop your apprentice? Okay. Next page is a visitation form that coaches use. The first one was required. This one's optional. This is just a tool. People say, well, you said to visit a group. How do we visit a group? What should we look for when we get there? I mean, help us with it. Well, your division leader will go with you on the first visit, and then we're going to teach you how to use this form, and this is just some categories to think through as you do a visit. What was the loving component like? Was there a learning component, et cetera, et cetera? Okay? Page 16 shows you how to use this form. And it should be, I think, right on the back of your copy there. And it is just a one-page tool. Okay? The next two pages help a group on page 17 identify some guidelines for discipling in, their people. Again, leaders will say, well, how do I know I'm doing the right things? I mean, I have a curriculum, and we're talking, we're praying, but are we on target? So we've given them some categories to think through. How's your group doing relational? Are you fostering safety? Are you generating excitement? What are you doing there? It just helps them. It's just a tool.
Now, are these turned in or are these...
No, these are simply tools we make available to them. Now, a coach may sit down and say, are you using that? Yeah, I'm using it. Oh, could we look at it? But it's just a tool. The next thing on page 18 is particularly for new leaders who say, what do I do to get ready for a meeting? Say, we have a little chart here that just helps you think through what you might need for a meeting. Okay? After using it a couple times, it becomes so intuitive that you probably never look at it the rest of your life. But it's there. We want to serve our leaders, so we provide tools for them to use. Okay?